This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Guys, you're forgetting stuff on the trail, forgetting when to take breaks, forgetting when to do certain things, and you just need a reminder? Well, now there's Chalk Talk. Body chalk for your body on the trail to remind yourself right on your arms, your shoulders, your legs, your face. It doesn't matter. You can remind yourself. Carl does this all the time to remind himself. Shoulder breaks. I need to take my backpack off after this mile. I need to badger Derek to filter my water. Anything you want. Chalk Talk. Get it done. Write it down. Live your life. What's going on, everybody? This is Derek, and with me today is the only man to use his pillowcase as a pillowcase, a bib, a napkin, and a buff. Carl Mandrioli.
Not a buff.
That's right. I said it.
With me today is Derek Somerville, the only man who needs a guide for a hike in his own neighborhood. True story. Yeah.
You know what? I can release the reins of control, Carl. And, yeah. I learned many a thing.
We went for a little hike in Derek's neighborhood the last time I visited, which was, oh man, how long ago was that? Like a week ago? And we were trying to find a quiet spot to do some recording outside. And he's like, oh, I just got this trail at the top of my hill. And I was trying to figure out where it was. So I actually had scouted out ahead of time to make sure it was a quiet enough spot. And so there's all these steps that go up to this, to the trail. And they're like really obvious. There's like 50 of them. And so I said, oh, yeah, I know where that is. It's the steps, right? And you're like, I don't remember those steps.
I don't know.
You don't even know your own neighborhood, dude.
You did not Google. First of all, you forget you're in an urban city. So there's going to be noise all over the place. And I also live by the military base. So there's like helicopters and bombs going off. And you never know when they're going
to
happen. So
that is true. Completely unrelated to not knowing your own trail in your neighborhood. But thanks for that.
Completely
that.
Related. And if you want to drive to Mexico probably or the beach, then there's just nowhere to go without sound. Unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah. Unless it's That's not what the story is about. The story wasn't about the bad sound we had. It was about you not knowing your own trail.
Who remembers steps on a trail I've been on once?
Because they were super clear and obvious.
I've only been on the trail, and I did it like 4 years ago.
It's okay. I guided you in your own neighborhood, and it worked out.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Speaking of guiding, we have a professional guide on our show today named Greg Hill.
The 2 million mile man, Greg Hill.
We do, yeah. So we'll get to his credentials here in a moment. But yeah, that's what we're going with this. He's the gentleman that might be guiding a trip that you would be going on. Not you, Derek, but you, our fellow adventurers out there, because we have the giveaway for 57 hours for a free guided trip.
Don't want to miss out on this, you guys. This guy is a legend. It may be him. It may be a different guy, but 57 hours has the best guides you're going to find anywhere to do all kinds of adventures. So sign up.
Yep.
Sign
up. Okay. So we got John 6:12. This is in reference to Jesus feeding the 5,000. And when they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, gather up the leftover fragments that nothing may be lost. Okay. This is about not being wasteful. So,
huh.
So Derek, what is an area that you struggle the most in your life as it relates to wastefulness?
Toothpaste, Carl. Toothpaste.
No hesitation. You just had that ready to go. Wow.
You know, okay. I feel like I just waste too much toothpaste. That's all I'm saying.
Like in your mouth, or you're like squeezing it in the trash?
Just squeezing it all over the place. No, I don't know. Okay. You know, I don't
That's
know.
That's not what I thought you were
going to say. You clearly waste hair gel on other things, so toothpaste it is. No.
Okay.
I think, I don't know. I mean, if I don't know if I have anything, I'm like, I try not to waste things. I think there's times I waste food for sure. Yeah.
For those that have been listening to the show for a long time, I think everybody knows where I'm going with this. I think it's batteries.
It's not batteries, yeah. Carl. Again,
what do you do with the partially used batteries? You just throw them away, right?
I gave them to you, actually. He came over to my house, guys. We shot a video for literally 1 minute, and then he's like, these are partially used batteries. So he didn't want me to explain this, but I'm going to explain it anyway.
I didn't want you throwing away.
But I said, you know what? I'm not going to keep them partially used. You just take them.
Right.
Just take them. That way I don't have the problem.
Right.
Okay.
So if there I wasn't go. There, wasteful, that, those are going in the trash. Anyway, we're going to talk about that because, yeah, Greg Hill is addressing kind of sustainability in the backcountry and how to make that happen, to have kind of a lesser impact. That's on his heart, and that's important to him. So we're going to hear his take on things. We're just going to get a taste of that. He's definitely got more to say about that you might hear about if you go on one of his guided trips. So who is Greg Hill, Derek? Give me one of his things, his stats.
Greg Hill, so in 1 year, he ascended more than 2 million miles. That's one of his claims over time. Why are you laughing? I don't get to laughing.
So just to be clear, he ascended more than 2 million miles in 1 year.
Of trail in 1 year, yes.
2 million feet. 2 million feet, folks.
Oh, not miles. Did I say miles? Let's do that again. Redo. Okay, so Greg is the 2 million footman?
Yeah.
What do you call him? Okay, 2 million footman. He's hiked over 2 million feet in 1 year. And then I think that's maybe his big claim to fame where he got attention. But I would say, like, I was even inspired. If this guy doesn't inspire you, I don't know who will. This he's doing all of these trips now where he's climbed 100 peaks, and he's trying to do it with as little carbon footprint as possible.
Right. That's part of his.
And he's going to explain that. Yeah, he's going to explain that more. So.
And he's into, you know, he's backcountry skiing. He is a mountaineer. He does, you know, backpacking trips. He's a guide for all those things. Rock climbing, everything above. So, yeah, there's a form which we'll talk about later where it takes like a minute to fill out to enter for this. And I did have like a quick feedback. Like, do you have any feedback for our show? And somebody put down on the form, can you please leave more of the mess ups specifically that Derek has in the show? And so the timeliness on this, Derek, is I just left that in for that person. So you're welcome.
That is just lovely. Did you write that?
No. I'll show you the form later. There's some interesting feedback. So without further ado, we caught up with Greg Hill, and here's how it went down. All right, we got Greg Hill from 57 Hours. Greg, how's it going today?
Pretty good. Just a busy day being a dad, husband, skier, guide, and every other hat I wear.
All right. So just not that busy, you're saying?
Yeah.
So you're the first person that we've had on, including fake guests, that did not want an outline or list of questions ahead of time. And so you're ready for this?
I'm ready. Yeah, I just thought it'd be more natural. I'd prefer to just be real and me versus prepped and clear, concise answers, because I might as well just give you some stumbles like I just did there and be real.
Exactly. Carl likes plan spontaneity, so you don't want to.
That's true. And Derek's more of the king of stumbles, so there's that.
Stumbles, hey, you know.
Stumbles, yeah.
Oh. I'm not afraid to get scrapes on my knee, Carl, okay? Some of us are. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, so quick backstory. So you were featured, starring, I guess, in a movie called Electric Greg, which we have linked in our show description. And this is all about how to be an adventurer and try to live as sustainably as possible. Is that a good definition for that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just think as outdoorsy people, we should be stewards for Mother Nature. And I realized at that point in my life, I hadn't been that great. And I wanted to see what I could do differently. And see if, especially in 2017, when electric cars were coming out and they seemed like an answer to this fossil fuel issue, but everybody was really hesitant to try them because they were maybe a commuter car or whatever. And there wasn't, it didn't seem like they'd ever been proven to be useful for a normal person. That just looked like you could commute with them and that's all. So yeah, I wanted to prove that you could take an electric car, that you could live an adventurous life that we all dream of, and that it would work.
You know, when you put these, you know, when you put content out there, like typically you get pretty strong responses, especially like from this perspective. Did you inspire anybody to make a change? Did you get feedback kind of confirming people that had already made a change, or what was the reaction you got to this?
Well, now we're quite a few years out of since I started my changes, and I've definitely convinced a lot of people to get electric cars. They saw my movie. They saw in the movie, I my goal was to climb and ski 100 different summits without the use of fossil fuels, or at least gas put in your car, because that's right. A bit of a thing is it's not, there is fossil fuels in my clothing, there's fossil fuels in the building of the car. Like there, you know, you can't get away. You can't be perfect.
Yeah.
The idea is just to be better. But yeah, through that adventure showing that you could be adventurous in an electric car, I definitely converted a few people who converted a few more. And I've, you know, that sort of pyramid effect where it just cascades. And I know that I've had lots of people reach out to me and thank me for it, because most people, once you get an electric car, you kind of just start driving it, and you get this little, I call it the electric smile, where you're just like,
yeah, you do.
You do.
I love it.
It's zippy. They drive really well. And I mean, I live in Revelstoke, British Columbia, and thankfully, like most of my electricity or all of it is from the melting snow off the mountains. So the snow I ski in the winter melts and powers my car for my adventures in the next summer. So it's pretty circular.
I mean, it's like extreme leave no trace in my opinion.
Except for the production of the car and the mine of the lithium batteries, and you know, there's trace.
Well, there's that. But you're not putting fumes
in. But aside from all that. So you mentioned this kind of pyramid effect. Now you're talking about like a pyramid of inspiration, not a pyramid scheme, just to clarify.
Yeah, I mean, it should have been a scheme too, if I could have got them all to send me $10.
That would have been great.
Well, I didn't know if there's a scheme where like, my name's Electric Greg, and you can call yourself Electric whatever so long as you buy into this process. Like, Derek, you calling yourself Electric Derek? Because you got an electric car.
I have an electric car, yeah, and I love it. I think by the end of the episode, we might get Carl to buy an electric car. That's our goal.
That's yeah.
This is not the time right now to be buying cars with the supply chain shortage. So we're actually looking at a car, but just with the skyrocketing prices of cars, it's tough.
Mm. It's a big V12 Supreme unleaded only car.
What?
It's like a huge just guzzler.
Moving on.
Look, you can get an electric car. You don't have to wait like years and months for it.
We'll circle back to that here in a little bit. It's not about my car purchasing. That's not what this episode's about, just to clarify.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
It should be. Although
electric Carl, I would take that electric car role.
That doesn't flow as well as Greg. Okay. So.
That's pretty good. No, it's even better.
Carl? Really? Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. That could be a song. We could make a song out of that. We'll figure it out.
Well, wait. I was just going to say that, you know, that I used that vehicle for an idea. And the idea is that outdoor people should be stewards from Mother Nature. And that once I got that car and I started kind of going down the way of, okay, I'm being a little bit better here, it kind of stimulated me looking at the rest of my life and seeing what other life changes I could make from, you know, being a weekday vegetarian to just, you know, single-use plastics or composting or gardening. You know, it kind of just cascaded this changes in my life. And it was the vehicle for an idea that just kept evolving me and trying to make me better.
Carl gives me a hard time. He'll call me like weekend vegan and weekend vegan guy, or like he'll have these names.
Part-time vegan.
But I'm like, you know what? It's all about the process of trying to become better. It's good. And I like that you are always trying to evolve and do something to better everything. So thank you, A.
Yeah, and don't let perfection get in the way, because we're not ever going to be perfect.
Exactly.
But we can all be better. We can all be better in so many ways. And honestly, like, some days you're better and some days you're not. But if overall you're better, then that's good.
That's very true. So, you know, Carl can keep harassing and that's okay. I don't mind. So let's talk about, so in your video, there's this scene there where you're about to ski down this amazing just bowl of ice. It just looked epic in Pakistan. It was amazing. It looked like a big giant bowl of ice. It was great. Snow, I should say. But anyway, so while you're going down it, an avalanche occurs. The snow loosens, it breaks behind you, in front of you. What was kind of going through your mind as you're trying to like turn and maneuver on loose snow? And then this was also kind of like a pivotal moment for you, if you want to go into that.
The first thing was, holy moly, I just made a huge mistake. Recover, recover. No, I mean, I'll rewind a little bit. So in the March 2014, I did what I called March Madness. I climbed 330,000 feet that month and skied a ton of stuff. And I was like, I was really fit. And then I got certified by the Association of Canadian Mountain Guides as a full ski guide, and meant I knew my stuff. So there I was. I was like fit and qualified, and I just felt like I could destroy the world. And then for that, we were out in Pakistan to go ski a bigger mountain in the background. And, you know, I was like, let's get some good footage. Let's be a free rider here. And typically in that situation, there was no real escape. So you typically, you work your way safely down. You do a ski cut, you let the snow move. If there's an avalanche, it goes below you. You kind of stabilize your way down if there's no escape route, because there really wasn't. But they're filming me, so I wanted to be a hero. So instead of my first turn, instead of stopping, I had total Kodak courage, and I kept shredding down the mountain. And three turns down, I look behind me and it's breaking apart. I look below me and it's breaking apart. And I was on this whole sliding pane of snow. And luckily, I'm really calm in stressful situations. And I just was like, okay, what can you do? What can you do? What was your plan? What was your plan? And I didn't had a plan. There was one safe spot, maybe over on the right. It was very minor, but maybe I could get out of the gully. So I started kind of aiming towards that and just kind of skiing on top of this pane of snow that's kind of moving and jumping from that one to the next one to the next one. And I almost made it. And then eventually the avalanche hit me and sent me tumbling for 1,500 feet down the mountainside. And there was a quick flash of light and I knew something had happened, but I didn't have time to deal with it because I was tumbling over and over and over and just kind of swimming and trying to stay on top of the moving snow. And right as it kind of slowed and turned into cement, I kind of was frozen like Han Solo and just stuck there. But luckily my face was out. So yeah. I dug the snow out of my mouth and started breathing. I was like, holy moly, I almost died there. And I thought I was fine, but fast forward a little bit more. There's obviously this, I could talk for hours on this whole story, but we're not here for that. But basically I broke my leg. It was shattered. There was a 24-hour rescue where we snow caved in the middle of the mountains at 20,000 feet.
Like, we've talked a lot about, you know, trying to get emergency help here in the States or in Canada, in, you know, first world countries. Yeah. And we have our beacons, we have our devices, but you're not in a country that has a lot of resources for that. So you mentioned this 24 hours. Like, what is that process? Are you using a satellite phone? Like, how are you getting help?
Yeah, it was a satellite phone. And when we eventually, anyhow, there was a lot of issues with the satellite phone because this porter that came up to help us a couple hours after the avalanche locked the phone out. So we actually couldn't use the phone. We didn't know if they're rescued. It was a bit of a situation. Definitely, I think more spots, the merrier, more communication, the better. But yes, we didn't know if they were rescuing us. I kept waiting for it. The day passed. It was 1 o'clock when the avalanche happened. My partner that stayed with me, he dug a snow cave, and then we cuddled for a couple hours. Finally, those other guys came up with some tent and stuff, so I at least had a sleeping bag. Anyhow, it was the longest night of my life. Then they spent 6 hours taking me down in a toboggan down the mountainside, not knowing if there was helicopters coming or anything, and eventually this helicopter came in and picked me up. And then I was the calmest patient you could ever imagine. I was helping them traction me. I was telling them what to do because I had first aid. But the second the helicopter picked me up, I cried and broke down. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to survive. But I couldn't let any doubt enter into my mind because I had to survive.
I would have been, I would have been freaking out. I've been like, you know, I don't know who the name of the porter. I've been like, hey, try password or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah,
or,
it was a little frustrating.
You know, just like whatever it takes to get back into that phone.
But anyhow, what ensued was basically 6 months of healing where I had to come home. I was on my couch, massive surgery. And during those 6 months, you know, I was on my couch a lot. I spent a lot of time mad at myself, thinking about my mistake. And during that time, I was like, okay, well, what would my legacy have been to my children? They're 8 and 9 at that point. Like, if I died and they'd never seen me again, what would they know of me? And, you know, they'd hear all these kind of records, these endurance things I'd done, and they'd know that I was the liver of life and somebody that just believed in pushing yourself and just shouting from mountaintops. But if you looked at it a little bit more, you'd see that I didn't care about the world. I had a big sled, a big truck. I heli-skied. I flew around the world all the time. And there was just this kind of like, who cares about the world? Let's just live it as large as we can. And so while I was on the couch, I was like, okay, I've been given another lease on life. I've got another chance here. And what am I going to do with this other chance? And what could I do to these next chapters of my life that would make them more meaningful for me and more impactful for the world? So I chose to start trying to be a bit better and be more sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, you're constantly growing and you're constantly evolving. I like that you are inspiring. It's inspiring just to watch that video, just to just to see how you want to make everything around you better. And I really think that's great. So
we've had people on the show before that have come to the similar conclusion, whether it's just through self-reflection or through, you know, just so many achievements or at the finish line where they realize like that by itself is kind of empty. And so there's a greater purpose that they're seeking. And we're all people in process, and we're kind of, you know, all figuring that out as we go. But
well, now we can just tell them to go buy an electric car and you'll be good.
Problem solved, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
So you made this comment. It said, to quote you, you said, if you can't change one person's point of view, how can you expect to change millions? So that was kind of part of that Electric Greg show. So have you come to any conclusions on that? Like, how do you change somebody's point of view?
Well, you just find those that are on the fence and change their point of view. There's some people that are on the other side of the fence and you won't be able to change them for a while. But if you can just get those that are in the midfield and make them, say, let's just talk. My brother did a TED talk in 2010 about weekday vegetarianism. And, you know, a lot of us are scared to not eat meat. And so he created this idea where you eat vegetarian during the week and you get your meat on the weekends. And it's just an easy gateway to take in that step. And, you know, that helped me a bit when I started doing my changes. And, you know, so he's changed me. And then since then I've changed a bunch of other people, and it just keeps it trickling and kind of the butterfly effect. And, you know, I think there's going to be obviously lots of people you can't change, but you kind of aim on those that are open-minded and you can change, and that butterfly effect will soon enough more and more. And, you know, supposedly it only takes about 5% of a population to really change things dramatically. So if we can just change 5%, we're going to shift it.
Carl, would you ever go vegan or vegetarian or no?
Yeah, it's amazing.
I've done the Daniel diet, which is
Daniel diet.
You know, kind of like that, kind of the raw, like kind of a vegan diet. Yeah.
How long for? Like a day?
I lasted a day. I lasted 10 days. Wow. It was this year actually. And not my thing. This is not what we're talking about here. So
he doesn't like to focus on him, Greg.
We're not talking about.
It's okay. Yeah. All right.
Let's tie this in though. Okay. Because I want to shift it over to the guiding aspect of things, because I'm really interested. I feel like our world today is very accommodating, right? So we can talk about this concept of veganism, or I'm gluten-free, or I can only, or I'm allergic to nuts, or all this and that. Not to mention, you know, people that have, whether it's just we'll say physical accommodations they need. I would imagine that on any given trip, there's a lot of ingredients you've got to consider to make it successful for varieties of folks. Is that accurate?
I was wondering how you're going to tie that into guiding. Yeah, I mean, I guess as a guide, my biggest goal is to kind of assess the whole group, figure out what their quirks and their quirks are, and try to how to what they're looking for out of the days, and make them the best day possible. But yeah, we're all different. We're all looking for different things. But I think in the end, I mean, people are hiring a guide, one, because they want to know that they're doing it safely. They want the best experience possible. And I just kind of, look to see what their needs are and try to accommodate them.
You're so easy going with that. But I think if I was structuring a trip and I had all these accommodations I had to make, I would just be very mindful, concerned, okay, do I have the right food for this person? Do I have the right gear for this person? Is everything lined up? And you're just like, we'll just kind of take it as it comes.
Well, no, I'll make sure that I've got all that stuff lined up. I mean, that's part of my job as a guide, is to look at all their needs and accommodate them.
I think Carl just envies your lack of anxiety, maybe. And is that what it is?
You're painting me as this really anxious person. That is not accurate.
No. Okay. But it's so fun.
All right. So with all the different folks you've taken out there, all the, you know, miles you've traveled, what would you say is like an underrated piece of gear that, you know, maybe it's not that big of a deal to most people, but you've found this to be very useful, or something that maybe people should have that we're not always thinking about?
Huh, that's a tough one. I mean, this summer when I did one of my worst hiking trips ever, I made some bad calls because there were lots of bugs, and I wish I'd had bug shirts for everybody in my group.
Oh, like the net stuff, or like?
Like a full bug jacket. No, not just bug dope or bug spray, like the full jacket. I'm pretty zen and I can just ignore the millions of bugs, but it ruined their day and possibly the next few days. And they're still going to bug me about it. I just saw them tonight and I hadn't seen them for a few months. And the first thing they mentioned was that bug-ridden trip. If I'd had a bug shirt, it might not have been as bad.
But those are the stories you remember, right? The ones where things go awry. Yeah, I read an article in Outside Magazine, this is years ago, talking about somebody who was going through the process of becoming a guide. And I think a lot of people just assume that if you are just an elite athlete at your sport, that you are automatically qualified. But whereas that fitness helps, I think, at least what this guy had learned was, it's all about the relational aspect you can have with other folks, because you're not going to typically be elite out there on a guided trip. You're more likely to be towards the back of the pack trying to encourage those that are struggling. Is that something that it kind of like naturally fits your personality, or is that challenging for you at times?
It isn't anymore. I mean, talk to me in 2005 when all I wanted to do was run around the mountains and I was guiding. I definitely started to look at objectives more for me than my clients, but As I matured and accomplished enough goals for myself, I definitely have switched it where I look at them. I'm like, this is all about you. What can I do for you? Yeah, you have to be quite compassionate. And for sure, for many years I wasn't. But the good guides are those that really are and understand that it's all about the clients and how to make their days the best possible.
Is there a tougher type of person to guide, in your opinion, overall? Because you know, you've done like heli skiing and guiding trips, and like you're saying you're doing rock climbing and all that. Is there a certain type of person that's difficult to guide?
There's definitely, for me, opinion? So I heli ski guided for probably 5 or 6 years. And when I got into guiding, I knew I wanted to guide people in the mountains, and I did some heli skiing. And then one day I gave the best day possible, but it ended on a sour note. But the eight hours were incredible. 10 minutes weren't. And all I could hear that night at dinner was these clients complaining about those last 10 minutes. And right then I vowed, I was like, I don't want to guide people where they just pay to expect the best. I want to guide people where they're ready to earn their turns, and they're out there for the mountains and the scenery and just the kind of the beauty of the mountains. So from then on, I focused more on human powered backcountry skiing, hiking. And that type of person is somebody that just understands that, you know, it might not be good. And, you know, it might be really buggy, or it might be, you know, the skiing might not be as good, but they get that we're there for the whole package
that I've been working for.
Yeah. And that, yeah, sometimes it's bad, but because it's bad, it's going to be really good. And because you've had the bad, that good will be that much better. And they're just more understanding. Right. If somebody's willing to hike and earn their turns, they're definitely going to be more open-minded and just a better person to be with.
Is that something you're mindful of when kind of putting the trip together? Or do you give some sort of like a speech ahead of time, like, hey, folks, here's how it's going to go down?
Listen, guys.
No, I don't know. That's a tough one. Most people seem to just be accepting. They get it. They get that ski touring is going to be hard, that climbing a mountain is going to be hard, and that it might cause them to dig deep and to kind of find their well of reserve and try to figure out how to be happy. And I'm a guide, so I'll help guide them and help them understand that sometimes it's not great.
So if Derek were to give one of these like guiding speeches on our next trip that we're hosting some folks, and there was one thing that he could say that you would suggest to make sure that everybody was on the same page or had reasonable expectations, what would be one piece of advice you'd give Derek to have a successful speech?
Other than go buy an electric car.
For this trip, you need to arrive in an electric car.
Everybody get an electric car, and then we'll meet back.
You actually stumped me. My silver tongue's not working too well for that question.
Ooh, he can't. All right, that's okay. I mean, we can start with anything. Hey, guys, throw all your meat away. We're going to eat plants and nuts the entire time. Buckle up. It's going to be a great ride.
The cactus that we find out in the desert and just hope that sustains us, right?
Okay, so I had a question for you. Is there a benefit to, you know, getting a guide for a guided tour as opposed to, let's say, like, hey, I'm just going to get a bunch of buddies together and go on a trip? And
yeah, I mean, I'd love just getting trips with buddies, but there's always tough decisions on who's going to make the decisions and, you know, why you, why me. And this really became clear with me a couple of years ago as we went caving, and caving's not a strength any of us had. And we found the best caver we could. And as we descended into this deep, dark hole in the mountainside, I remember just looking at him and giving him all my doubts, giving him all my worries, all the decision-making. And I just embraced the situation and enjoyed the experience because I didn't have to worry about things. And it really made me realize that that's what people do with me, is that once they go out guiding with me and I'm guiding them, is they just kind of they get rid of all those dynamics between the friends and everything, and they're just able to just enjoy the experience because they know that I've been trained for years and that I'm out there to give them the best experience possible. And they don't have to worry. They can just enjoy the views. They can just enjoy the skiing or the hiking, and they don't need to focus on all the other things because they're paying me to do that. Right.
I think this is good in general just to hear this from a professional guide that you – you know, we'll release those reins and like give them to somebody else who knows more, and you're still willing to go out there and learn and experience something fresh.
Oh, there's just so much value if you know somebody's more experienced and they are going to make all the right decisions, and you can just pass that responsibility off and be carefree and have fun.
Exactly. I think this is a good learning experience for Carl because I think he likes control. So Carl, would you be able to do this? You know, like hire somebody to do a trip for you?
To go on a guided trip? Absolutely.
Well, like up like a moderate grassy knoll. I mean, that's a challenge for you, I know, but like
to go up the grassy knoll. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Could you let go of the reins?
That's like my dream. Is I think I've only done trips where I've been planning them forever. And so there's just, one time I want to go on a trip where somebody else plans or guides or whatever. I think for me, that would just be, I could just be loosey goosey, show up and just have fun.
That's one of the reasons that it's fun to have websites like 57 Hours that just like, people can be like, I want to do this and I want to go to Iceland hiking. And then they can click on it and they can sign up knowing that they're in the most capable hands possible. And that the trip is just going to be amazing. And then, and then in the weeks and everything above it beforehand, you don't have to stress and worry and plan. You can just excitedly expect the best that's coming and just get ready for it.
So like if Carl forgets his pillow or sleeping bag, you guys might have an extra one over there.
Oh, always. That's what I'm saying. Always.
Okay, good to know. There you go.
That sounds like a silly question. That's actually probably something you encounter pretty frequently.
Do we know if you're going to be the guide for the trip giveaway that we're offering or that you're offering through our show? Or is it maybe going to be some other guide or we don't know yet?
I think that'll likely depend. I think it's more of a credit for an adventure, but I'd love it if whoever wins it can hire me and we can either do a trip in the summer or in the winter if they're not skiers.
Yeah. Okay.
Vice versa, that didn't make sense, but yeah, we're not sure.
And this kind of segues perfectly into kind of our wrap up question. We always like to, anybody who's representing some sort of content, business, or organization, we like to kind of open it up to for you to share anything about 57 Hours and the guiding services, adventures you got going on. Anything else you want to? This is your chance to sell everybody on this.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned, I'm offering this green ski trips through 57 Hours because they're this awesome website company that's basically trying to facilitate adventure worldwide for people, and that people will know when they go on to 57hours.com that they will be getting the best guides around the world. And you know, they're offering incredible climbing trips and hiking trips. And you know, this is also Victor, the CEO or owner of it. He's concerned about his footprint, and he's concerned about offering all these trips to people without also addressing the impacts of them. So this green ski trips with me is sort of our first exploration into, hey, what can we do as guides and these offerings, and how can we make them better? And you know, we know it's not perfect, but this is kind of the first step, and it's like, okay, let's see what little impacts we can change here and see if this works. And then if this works, we're going to see, take another step forward and just try to keep evolving it till we can offer completely sustainable trips around the world, really.
Nice. That sounds great.
Well, we already have people that have been applying for the giveaway, and we have that link in our show description as well. So it's just like a 1-minute form to apply, and you get multiple entries. You get an entry if you are a subscriber to our podcast. You get one if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, and you get another entry if you have supported us on Patreon. So up to 3 entries in one shot. So we appreciate all those things. And go ahead and apply. You got until the end of December. You might be going on a trip with Greg Hill. So that would be awesome and amazing.
Join me. I'm psyched. We can go hiking. We can go climbing. We can go skiing, whatever. I can definitely, and we can just have great conversations about anything as we wander around the Mother Nature.
All right. Well, hey, Greg, we really appreciate you taking the time and joining us. And we'll definitely continue to promote 57 Hours giveaway. I think people are pretty excited about this. We've already gotten a lot of positive feedback. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. It's been a pleasure.
Derek, what do you think about that?
What do I think about that? I think that was amazing. It was it's inspiring to see somebody just be that passionate about A, bettering themselves and doing better, but also trying to inspire others to like to just take pride in where they live on Earth, and just all that stuff is great. So when are you going to get an electric car, And when are you going to throw the meat in the trash? I mean, I don't know what you're going to throw. It's never going to happen. So,
yeah.
But
I shared that you kind of, you said 2 million miles of, you know, ascending, and you kind of messed that up at the beginning.
It felt that way.
I feel like I have to reveal that I messed up as well on this interview. And so, because Greg was so kind, the program that we used to record remotely, I'd say 95% of the time works well, but we conducted the entire interview and didn't record anything.
Way to go.
And so we had to go back and re-record. So I'll take credit for that mess up, just so that I'm not picking on you too much.
You know what? I'm going to give you that credit. I'm going to freely give you that credit. I'll take my mess up over your mess up any day.
Okay. Well, he was very kind. So we kind of mixed up a little bit. So we didn't get to all the questions. We got to the first round. So I want to bring up a few of these. One of them was... He kind of got referred to as like a net zero adventurer. He's a sustainable adventurer. He's trying to use like the electric power versus the gas, that kind of thing. He wants to be sustainable. And so I thought about, you know, like, how do you better sustain yourself out in the wild? Do you think that in order to be more sustainable, do you think he actually brings Tupperware?
You know, good question. I mean, you know. I'm going to say no. I think he's just maybe okay. Reusing things.
You think he's plastic bag still?
And that's what I think he does.
Well, if he does, he's not the only one. Just saying.
Well, so. We know. Well, you can't really reuse your plastic bag drink mix bags because you leave them on the trail. So you're going to have to get a new bag every time.
I think that's just a general rule of thumb. Anything that you leave on the trail, it is very hard to reuse, right?
Exactly. So just don't leave things on the trail.
Okay. Whoa.
Boom.
Okay. That's a message that we got to, you know.
Mind blown.
Yeah, mind blown. Okay, that's up there with when you're thirsty, drink. Remember that one?
Vaguely, yeah.
You're just dropping wisdom bombs on people right now.
I'm trying. So thanks. I'm trying. Derek. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay, another question that I had that we didn't get to. So we were referencing that movie Electric Greg, and he said something along the lines of, if I didn't have any doubt, like this is when he was asked if he thought he could actually do the 2 million feet. He said, if I didn't have any doubt, it wouldn't be a challenge.
Yeah, that was good. Right? I like that.
Yeah, which I liked. So here's my question. And do you think that when he's guiding, that, you know, obviously when he's guiding people that are probably like not as fit as him. So do you think that when they share with him that they are having some doubts, he'll just tell them, you know, it's okay to doubt. And you know what? I'm not even sure if he can make it either.
Probably. I mean, be like, oh, okay. I'm sorry.
You think he says that? You think he says, no. Like, I don't know if he can make it.
No, so. He's not going to say that. This is where I think you need to write this stuff down for your trips that you plan. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Derek, you know, like, come on. Like, can you even make it up over this rock and this? And what's a chalk stone? Like, what's your problem? Like, these are things that you should be writing down so you can get better at leading a trip. I think this is huge. So
I should tell people to just turn around when they're struggling.
You kind of should. No, you have, right? I mean, you would probably
do. I've told people to turn around.
You know what?
Looks like you're having a hard time. Look, just go back to the car.
You need to just give up, please. Please, just give up. Don't push yourself. Don't challenge yourself. Yeah.
We've been in situations where somebody did need to turn around, but it wasn't for that scenario.
No,
so,
yeah.
Do you consider yourself a pseudo backpacking guide when we are doing the Patreon trips?
A pseudo backpacking guide? I mean, I don't know if it's a guide. I mean, like, I feel like I can.
It's not a guided trip. Not even close to the same thing.
He's doing like legit.
But there's still, we're setting up the trip and people are looking to you for leadership. They say, Derek, I don't know what to do right now. Please help me.
I would say filter your own water, number one. No, I mean, I feel competent in solving issues and problems on the trail. I mean, I think I pride myself on a lot of that stuff. But
okay.
But I like, you know, these are like the guys that this is like a, they have a whole like, you know what, like a company, organization, whatever you call it, and they're gonna supply you when you forget your pillow, Carl. They're gonna supply you when you forget your,
which is awesome.
So it's nice to have that kind of like company backing of like, you know, they have things that you need if you forget. You just basically need to go and show up and bring what you think.
A little more than that.
Well, bring the essentials
along those lines.
Yeah, but bring the essentials. But you don't have to worry about all the details. That they're gonna take care of all that stuff.
For sure. There's some details you still got to figure out in terms of like getting there. But,
well, yes. But once you get there.
Yeah. And I don't, and just to clarify, I don't think that people are looking to you in that leadership role as much on the Patreon trips, because a lot of those folks are probably more experienced than us, to be honest.
They might be. Yeah.
So
yeah, they might be.
All right. Did you have any takeaways? Anything else?
No, that was thorough. I liked that a lot. It was a really enjoyable interview. He's a very inspiring gentleman. So
no takeaways, zero responses to anything.
I mean, it was. I think I responded during the interview. Were you there? Did you listen?
Kind of.
Yeah, there you go. That's your problem. So I already got the electric car. So I think you should have paid attention to that. But
right.
Would it be fun to like hire him or get him to go on like some crazy European trip someday or something? That'd be amazing. What a cool job.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and that's who I'd be looking for, to be honest, is somebody who's easygoing and not just, super intense and in my face. Right?
And like he said, like he really is, he thrives on like when things go wrong and there was like the tragedy of the avalanche. He's like, I can stay calm in these situations. And that's somebody you want to go with anywhere. I mean, cause stuff will happen. Maybe not that extreme, but
yeah,
you want somebody who's going to be level headed and like be able to like process what to do.
So. Right. So yeah, let's put yourself in that scenario. So you got the broken leg and you're struggling. You can't contact. The satellite phone's locked out. It's not working. Oh. What are you doing? What are you saying in that scenario?
Good question. I think it's just trying to keep your mind any little task you can think of. Okay, well now I got to dig my snow grave. Now I just got to try and get some rest. Now I just got to get some water. Now I got to try to eat a little food and just try to keep going with little decisions until hopefully you can get down the mountain, right? And then he's like, we had to get down the mountain. Then we had to. So I think keeping the mind occupied. And then he said, get in. He got in the chopper and he just broke down, which makes complete sense.
Yeah, because you're so focused on that. And then finally you can kind of like just, you have relief, so to speak.
That's survival mode. Yeah.
The emotions pour out. Yeah. That's actually a good answer. Yeah, I would be still trying to figure out how to get back into the sat phone, which it sounds like they might have, or they came with an alternative. I'd be throwing out all sorts of passwords and being like, what's your birthday? Yeah. What's this? What's that? So,
How bad did the guy feel, though?
Yeah.
The porter guy. Oh, what a...
I don't know. I haven't locked myself out of one of those devices. We haven't had a straight-up sat phone either, so...
How do you lock yourself out? I don't understand how that happens.
There's not a key. It's not like a physical...
Is there like a password and he like did the wrong one?
That's what I was thinking,
times?
Right? That's why I suggested that.
Because you do that with your email a lot. You lock yourself out. Or your phone.
Yeah, or out of the house.
Exactly.
Right?
So, food for thought.
I told that story, right, about how I got locked out of the house. I had to camp in my backyard.
That is amazing. I don't know if I would do that. I think I would just break a window and call it a day.
That sounds, in your rage.
But maybe you need one of these. I have one of those key lock codes. You can just type in a code and
it opens it. We have the opposite of fancy. We don't have a lot of the stuff that most people have now with the ring and this and that. So we need to upgrade for sure.
Well, it's not really fancy, Carl. Okay.
We can talk about doorbells and stuff. You want to keep talking about them, but...
Like, you want to talk about your backyard camping? We can talk about that.
We can do that. We'll do an episode called How to Camp in the Backyard. So,
and how to open your front door. Here we go.
Last question. This guy has ascended and descended so much elevation. Do you think that he has earned the right to change his name from Greg Hill to Greg Mountain?
I'm going to say yes. I mean, that's a pretty awesome name. Greg Mountain. Or just the mountain? No, that's already taken. Yeah, Greg Mountain.
Which sounds epic. So along that same vein, if we'd kind of like named ourselves based on our achievements, would you rename yourself like Derek Knapp?
Derek Knapp. I don't really take naps. Would it be Carl Shoulders? Would it be, what were we talking about? is that where we're going with this? Derek Knapp. Carl, take your backpack off. Dismount your pack.
Just rolls right off the tongue right there.
Right?
Yeah.
You like that?
Okay, so we've got trivia coming up, Derek, and I've lost one, so I'm already kind of in the hole now, and so as a result, I got a reaction, I got a response with this trivia. So coming up right for this, we've got National Parks Trivia.
National Parks, okay, I gotcha. A funny joke, okay.
Okay, so the reason why I chose National Parks Trivia is because we've done a couple of these, and no matter how easy or simple the questions are, you don't pass them. So I'm trying to even the field.
Here we go. This is what you wanted to do. You take a hit and you lose.
Yeah, even the playing field.
And then
field.
I was like...
Right? These are all reasonable questions that anybody that knows...
Are they? I think I might intentionally bomb this just to appease you.
Wow.
We'll see. I might intentionally
People
bomb
are not believing...
That's right. No, I might throw it. No, I might throw it.
People do not buy that for one second. Do you think people really believe that you might throw it, or you're just so embarrassed ahead of time that you're going to get all three of these wrong that you're just trying to cover yourself? What do you think people believe?
I don't care.
Yes, you do, because you're telling people ahead of time that you might throw it, and you know that's not true. You're so competitive, you don't throw anything.
We'll find out. Here we go.
We'll find out. So I will share this because I know that this is a weakness of yours.
Okay.
This will be the only time I do National Park Tree for the season. Is that fair?
Noted here. Okay, noted.
Okay. All right, here we go. I'm going to ask a question.
Okay.
That I think was from the last National Parks trivia. I think it was the same exact question. Can you name two desert parks that are not in Utah?
Two desert national parks.
Yeah. I think there's like five or six.
Okay, here we go. I'm thinking one. Oh, I know. There was one in, I remember the, what is it called? The Badlands. There's okay. Badlands. I remember watching the mm-hmm. show Badlands. And then there's Grand Canyon.
Grand Canyon. I'll give it to you.
Death Valley.
Death Valley. That's the one I was looking for because that's in your state.
Hey.
Whoa. Okay, you've improved since last time. Perhaps I doubted you. I apologize for that because you got three there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's the you got Great Basin in Nevada. You got a couple in Texas. So yeah,
now he's going to ramp it up. How many questions are there? Three questions?
Three questions. Just got to get one more right, and you're good.
All
right. One more right. Okay. And this next one's multiple choice.
Oh.
Number two, which of the following is not a national park? All right. So you got A, Hot Springs, B, Channel Islands, C, Guadalupe Mountains, or D, Appalachian Mountains?
Ooh. Okay, wait. So we have Guadalupe, Channel Islands.
Hot Springs, Appalachian.
What's the full Hot Springs one?
It's called Hot Springs National Park, if it's real.
It's either Hot Springs or Appalachian. I don't know. I'm just going to Appalachian.
Appalachian Mountains is correct. Wow.
Where's Hot Springs National Park? Where is that?
That's in Arkansas.
Arkansas, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
and right. Really, the Appalachian Mountains, like you might not have even heard of all these, but the reason why that was supposed to be kind of a Captain Obvious one is because they run from Maine to Georgia, so there's not going to be a national park that runs that long.
Right? No. I guess I don't remember some of the other ones. It's been a while.
Yeah. Since although I take that back. That's not fair because we have Rocky Mountain National Park, and those go really long. So it could just be like a zone.
You just stuck your foot in your own mouth. I love it.
Yeah, I did. Okay. So it doesn't matter because you already won. So
I did.
Here's an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
If you're so dominant now at National Parks trivia, number three, name any national park not already mentioned, that's east of the Mississippi River.
Not already mentioned. I don't even know.
And this is where Derek shines, right here. Right here. There's like 1,000 of them. Just name one. There's not really 1,000.
No, there's wait, let me think. I'm thinking. Oh, I know. There's, I always thought about this after I saw Pirates of the Caribbean. It was, it's the Tortugas National Park. Tortugas. Is that right?
All right. Dry Tortugas, my friend. That is correct. You were 3 for 3.
There's the Florida one, the Everglades.
Yeah, there's Everglades. You got the Smoky Mountains. I apologize for doubting you. I do have to share that this episode was edited down a little bit. Derek took about 10 minutes to answer each of those questions in real time.
Not correct. It was maybe a minute to two times.
Not tops. Even close to that. That is incorrect.
But I felt a lot of pressure because you're intentionally trying to stump me with National Parks trivia.
You had already passed trivia and you still took forever at number three.
I wanted to be a perfectionist.
I'm not saying I'm part of this group, but there's some folks out there that definitely are thinking, if Derek really did take that long between questions, was he Googling stuff?
Brother, you can.
I'm not saying I'm part of the group. I'm just saying that there's that question's
you
out there.
You put it out there. I don't have my computer near me, so it's untypable at this point.
Okay. So I've got a couple tidbits to wrap things up. We've got our next Patreon bonus episode coming up here in early January, so please get on board for that. We would be indebted to you. And don't forget to enter the 57 hours drawing for a guided trip. It's going to be like a $750 gift card that you can apply possibly even to more than one trip. And click on the link below and super easy, easy peasy. That's all I got.
Indeed. That was gorgeous. Thanks, guys, for joining us. Again, jump on the Patreon. Get yourself a Christmas gift. Patreon. Hear Carl and me even more. A lot of bonus content, or get it for a loved one who just loves to hear about the outdoors. And make sure you enroll in your last opportunity for the trip giveaway. And we will see you next time. Remember, guys, if you see a guy and he has a nice, chalky skin, it's Carl Mandrilli reminding himself to not eat meat and to buy an electric car. We'll see you.